The grenade type had been determined as standard NATO issue, and the execution had been in the kitchen of a Red Brigade safe apartment in a slum area of the city. The police had no leads. It sounded like Calif. There was no reason to believe that his chain did not include prominent Italian businessmen. A millionaire Italian living in his own country had to be the Earth's most endangered species, after the blue whale, Peter thought wryly, and they might have called on Calif to go on the offensive. Peter finished the Continental papers and turned with relief to the English and American. It was a little before Sunday noon, and he wondered how he could live out the desolate hours until Monday morning. He was certain that there would be no reply to Stephen's request for a meeting before then. He started on the English language newspapers, spinning them out to cover the blank time ahead. The British Leyland Motor Company strike was in its 15th week, with no prospect of settlement. Now there was a case for Calif, Peter smiled wryly, remembering his discussion with Stephen. Knock a few heads together for their own good. There was only one other item of interest in his morning's reading. The President of the United States had appointed a special negotiator in another attempt to find a solution to the Israeli occupation of the disputed territories in the Middle East. The man he had chosen was Dr. Kingston Parker, who was described as a personal friend of the President and one of the senior members of his inner circle of advisers, a man well thought of by all parties in the dispute, and an ideal choice for the difficult job. Again, Peter found himself in agreement. Kingston Parker's energies and resources seemed bottomless. Peter dropped the last paper and found himself facing a void of boredom that would extend through until the following day. There were three books he should read beside his bed, and the Hermes crocodile case was half filled with Namco material. Yet he knew that he would not be able to concentrate, not with the prospect of the confrontation with Calif overshadowing all else. He went through into the mirrored bathroom of the suite and found the package that he had purchased the previous day in the cosmetic section of Galerie Anspach, one of the city's largest departmental stores. The wig was of good quality human hair, not the obviously shiny nylon substitute. It was in his own natural colour, but much longer than Peter wore his hair. He arranged it carefully along his own hairline, and then set to work with a pair of scissors, trimming and tidying it. When he had it as close to his liking as possible, he began to tint the temples with Italian boy hair silvering. It took him most of the afternoon, for he was in no hurry, and he was critical of his own work. Every few minutes he consulted the snapshot which Melissa Jane had taken with her new Polaroid camera, Peter's Christmas present to her at Abbott's U on New Year's Day. It was a good likeness of both the Stride brothers, Peter and Stephen, standing full face and smiling indulgently at Melissa Jane's command to do so. It highlighted the resemblances of the two brothers, and also pointed out their physical differences. The natural hair colouring was identical, but Stephen's was fashionably longer, curling on his collar at the back, and appreciably greyer at the temples and streaked at the front. Stephen's face was heavier, with the first trace of jowls, and his colour was higher, perhaps the first ruddy warning of heart malfunction, or merely the banner of good living in his cheeks. Yet with the wig on his head, Peter's own face seemed much fuller. Next, Peter shaped the moustache, trimming it down into the infantry officer model that Stephen favoured. There had been a good selection of artificial moustaches to choose from in the cosmetic section, amongst a display of artificial eyelashes and eyebrows, but none had been exactly right. Peter had to work on it carefully with the scissors, and then tint it with a little silver. When he fastened it in place with a special adhesive gum, the result was quite startling. The moustache filled out his face even further, and of course the eyes of the twins were almost exactly the same shape and colour. Their noses were both straight and bony. Peter's mouth was a little more generous, and did not have the same hard, relentless line of lip, but the moustache concealed much of that. Peter stood back and examined himself in the full-length mirror. He and Stephen were within a quarter of an inch in height. They had the same breadth of shoulder. Stephen was heavier in the gut, and his neck was thickening, giving him a thrusting bull-like set to his head and shoulders. Peter altered his stance slightly. It worked. He doubted that anybody who did not know both of them intimately would be able to detect the substitution. There was no reason to believe that Caliph or any of his closest lieutenants would have seen either Stephen or Peter in the flesh. He spent an hour practicing Stephen's gait, watching himself in the mirror, trying to capture the buoyant cockiness of Stephen's movements, searching for little personal mannerisms. The way Stephen stood with both hands clasped under the skirts of his jacket, the way he brushed his moustache with one finger from the parting under his nose, left and right. Clothing was not a serious problem. Both brothers had used the same tailor since Sandhurst days, and Stephen's dress habits were invariable and inviolable. Peter knew exactly what he would wear in any given situation. Peter stripped off wig and moustache and repacked them carefully in their Galerie Anspach plastic packets, then buttoned them into one of the interior divisions of the Hermes case. Next, he removed the Cobra Parabellum from another division. It was still in the chamois leather holster, and he bounced the familiar weight of the weapon in the palm of his hand. Reluctantly, he decided he could not take it with him. The meeting would almost certainly be in England. The contact that Stephen had had on Thursday had clearly originated in London. He had to believe the next contact would be in that same city. He could not take the chance of walking through British customs with a deadly weapon on his person. If he was stopped, there would be publicity. It would instantly alert Caliph. He would be able to get another weapon from Thor Command once he was in England. Colin Noble would supply him, just as soon as Peter explained the need. He was certain of that. Peter went down and checked the Cobra pistol into the safe deposit box of the hotel reception office, and returned to his room to face the wearying and indefinite wait. It was one of a soldier's duties to which he had never entirely accustomed himself. He always hated the waiting. However, he settled down to read Robert Asprey's War in the Shadows, that definitive tome on the history and practice of guerrilla warfare down the ages. He managed to lose himself sufficiently to be mildly surprised when he glanced at his watch and saw it was after 8 o'clock. He ordered an omelette to be sent up by room service, and 10 seconds after he replaced the receiver, the telephone rang. He thought it might be a query from the kitchen about his dinner order. "Yes, what is it?" he demanded irritably. "Peter?" "Stephen." "He has agreed to a meeting." Peter felt his heart lunge wildly. "When? Where?" "I don't know. I have to fly to Orly tomorrow. There will be instructions for me at the airport." Caliph, covering and backtracking. Peter should have expected it. Desperately, he cast his mind back to the layout of Orly Airport. He had to find a private place to meet Stephen and make the changeover. He discarded swiftly the idea of meeting in one of the lounges or washrooms. That left one other location. "What time will you be there?" Peter demanded. "Cooks have got me onto the early flight. I'll be there at 11:15. "I'll be there before you," Peter told him. He knew the Sabina timetable by heart, and all senior Namco executives had special VIP cards which assured a seat on any flight. "I will book a room at the Air Hotel on the 4th floor of Orly South Terminal, in your name," he told Stephen now. "I'll wait in the lobby. Go directly to the reception desk and ask for your key. I will check behind you to make certain you're not followed. Do not acknowledge me in any way. Have you got that, Stephen?" "Yes." "Until tomorrow, then." Peter broke the connection and went through into the bathroom. He studied his own face in the mirror. Well, that takes care of getting a weapon from Thor. Caliph had not set the meeting in England. It was clear now that Paris was only a staging point, and that in his usual careful fashion, Caliph would move the subject on from there. perhaps through one or more staging points, to the final rendezvous. The subject would go in unarmed and unsupported, and Peter was certain that afterwards Caliph would take his usual pains to ensure that the subject would be unable to carry back a report of the meeting. I'm drawing two cards inside for a straight flush, and Caliph is the dealer, from a pack that he has had plenty of time to prepare, Peter thought coldly. But at least the waiting was over. He began to pack his toilet articles into the waterproof Gucci bag. Sir Stephen Stride marched into the lobby of Orley South Air Hotel at 5 minutes past noon, and Peter smiled to himself in self-congratulation. Stephen was wearing a blue double-breasted blazer, white shirt and cricket club tie, above grey woollen slacks and black English handmade shoes. None of your fancy Italian footwear for Stephen. It was Stephen's standard informal dress, and Peter had only been wrong about the tie. He had guessed that it would be an Isengari pattern. Peter himself wore a double-breaster and grey slacks under his trench coat, and his shoes were black Barkers. Stephen's eyes flickered around the lobby, passing over Peter sitting in a far corner with a copy of Le Monde. Then Stephen moved authoritatively to the reception desk.
"My name is Stride. Do you have a reservation for me?"
Stephen spoke slowly, in rich, plummy tones, for very few of these damned people spoke English. The clerk checked swiftly, nodded, murmured a welcome, and gave Stephen the form and the key.
416.
Stephen checked the number loudly enough for Peter to hear. Peter had been watching the entrance carefully. Fortunately, there had been very few guests entering the lobby during the few minutes since Stephen's arrival, and none of those could possibly have been Caliph surveillance. Of course, if this was a staging point, as Peter was certain it was, then Caliph would have no reason to put surveillance on Stephen, not until he got much closer to the ultimate destination. Stephen moved to the elevator with a porter carrying his single small valise, and Peter drifted across and joined the small cluster of guests waiting at the elevators. He rode up shoulder to shoulder with Stephen in the crowded elevator, neither of them acknowledging the other's existence. And when Stephen and the porter left at the fourth stage, Peter rode on up 3 floors, walked the length of the corridor and back, then took the descending elevator to Stephen's floor. Stephen had left the door to 416 off the catch, and Peter pushed it open and slipped in without knocking. "My dear boy." Stephen was in his shirt sleeves. He had switched on the television, but now he turned down the sound volume and hurried to greet him with both affection and vast relief. "No problems?" Peter asked. "Like clockwork," Stephen told him. "Would you like a drink? I got a bottle in the duty-free." While he hunted for glasses in the bathroom, Peter checked the room swiftly. A view down towards the square, functional buildings of the market that had replaced the picturesque Les Halles in central Paris. Matched curtains and covers on the twin beds. Television and radio sets between the beds. Modern, soulless furniture. It was a room. That was the most and the least that could be said for it. Stephen carried in the glasses and handed one to Peter. "Cheers." Peter tasted his whiskey. It was too strong, and the Parisian tap water tasted of chlorine. He put it aside. "How is Caliph going to get instructions to you?"
"Got them already."
Stephen went to his blazer, hanging over the back of the chair, and found a long white envelope in the inside pocket. This was left at the Air France information desk. Peter took the envelope, and as he split the flap, he sank onto one of the armchairs. There were 3 items in the envelope. A first-class Air France airline ticket, a voucher for a chauffeur-driven limousine, and a hotel reservation voucher. The air ticket could have been purchased for cash at any Air France outlet or agency. The limousine and hotel bookings could have been made equally anonymously. There was no possibility of a trace back from any of these documents.